Let's go. Recording.
I forgot how much I want to go and see. I want to watch Clue again. from reading the suggestion, well, not reading the suggestions. The GIF from the GIF on Twitter that we put out for the suggestions. God damn!
It's just Tim Curry smirking.
It's really good. When me and Abby watched it a couple of years ago, having not seen it since we were kids, it started out and we were kind of, you know, we didn't know if it would be any good. We thought it probably wouldn't. And when it started out, we were kind of going, this isn't very good. And then there's a point about halfway through or even earlier where you just go, this is incredibly good.
It's just like everyone's got a good, like, not well-rounded, but sort of like, interesting characters that you actually want to stay on screen because you're like, no, don't go.
Yeah. Before I knew that was what the game, before the, like, Cluedo was called Clue in America, yeah. I thought that it was called Clue to avoid copyright infringement, and it wasn't actually an official Cluedo movie. Because, after all, they used a totally different cast to Cluedo, the television series.
Yeah.
There was no Christopher Biggins anywhere to be seen.
We've got Professor Purple and Colonel Yellow.
Well, it felt like that because Mrs. White was supposed to be this little doddery old round old woman cook. Mm. And instead, I can't remember what she was, but she wasn't old.
She was like a maid in the film, wasn't she, or something?
Was she?
I think so, yeah.
Let's everyone stand up and clap your hands together for a returning veteran, Private Piccalilli.
And wasn't the bloke the so-called ill brother from Better Call Saul? Wasn't he Reverend Green or someone?
Oh,
I can't remember.
I think he was, wasn't he?
I need to watch it again.
Christopher Lloyd was Professor Plum.
Mm.
It's flipping brilliant. I'm going to have to watch it again.
Or right. Scientist Purple.
Let's make a podcast. Podcast.
Vicar Lime.
Podcast time. Time for podcast.
That's just to comment on the GIF we used, if you want to go to twitter.com/ Life's a Pitch Show. Yeah, look for the Tim Curry GIF reviews, because Katie Lidster has commented, "Oof, that Tim Curry smirk."
It's true.
Yeah, and she's got not a suggestion, just an observation. Well, unless you don't get anything decent, that would be a great title for a mystery film. Oof, that Oof, Tim that Curry Tim... smirk.
Someone's stolen Tim Curry's smirk.
Actually, let's forget about this week's genre. Let's just talk about Tim Curry's smirk in the movie.
Okay, so we've got one from Ross_Originals, and that is The Girl with No Navel.
Oh!
The Girl with No Navel. That's N-A-V-E-L, I assume.
Yes.
Well, yeah, The Girl with No Navy. That's fairly normal. So the poster is obviously the poster for American Beauty, but without a belly button.
yeah, all right. Just roses and
yep.
stuff. Yep. I haven't seen American Beauty. I know that there are roses and stuff.
Well, it doesn't. The film doesn't matter. I'm only talking about the poster.
Mm.
Yeah. I think, basically, Dave, what happened is, I don't think I've seen the poster, but I have seen clips from clip shows. So I looked for the most visually striking scene in my memory banks in American Beauty, and that was what came up.
Yes.
One that sure. might show off the midriff of a young lady.
Yes. Okay.
Very much so, yes.
The Girl with No Navel, right? I'm thinking, you know how we all have belly buttons?
Go on. Yeah.
Because of something that happened in our past. Some traumatizing thing.
What?
That happened to all of us.
Okay.
In our past.
That we never speak of.
We were born.
Right.
Yeah.
And then they cut the umbilical cord, leaving the belly button. So this girl wasn't born normally, clearly. She
okay.
was cloned, which leads me to think that there's murders going on, but by a clone.
I mean, wow. Like, that is firstly, we don't have to have murders. This could be a Jason Bourne scenario where someone's just trying to find out who they are.
Like, yeah, that, why not? I think I was just trying to set the premise that we're talking about clones here.
Yeah, that's fair enough. A reason you wouldn't have a belly button is if you were a clone. That is a well-established fact. I'm sure everyone can agree that if you're a clone, you don't have a belly button, because why would anyone put a belly button on a clone?
yeah. So, why would you put that there? Why not? When the guy's designing it, like, should we have this? No, it should be very clear that this individual is a clone.
Yep. Let's make it obvious for all to see.
That's how you identify them.
Just in case the clone and the base body from what we clone them from is stood on a rooftop with a policeman pointing a gun at them, going, which one's the real one? They know.
They can just flash the policeman and then...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is the opening scene to this film.
So, actually, you know what? That is a good idea for how you would identify a person who's a robot or a clone or something. Yeah, they wouldn't have a belly button, would they?
No.
Because that's just part of the birth process. There's not actually anything about that that you need.
Mm. Unless, of course, you, while you were being grown in a vat, they used the umbilical cord.
Which they obviously would.
Yeah, probably. But not to worry about that.
Yeah.
Let's pretend that clarification doesn't exist.
Yes.
Are we going to start with something like incredibly eye-catching intense with this? Would we? Like, I would say, like, you'd have someone.
I think we start with an establishing shot of a belly buttonless stomach.
It's just going to look like a plane of flesh.
Yeah, we start with a plane of flesh. And then zoom out to reveal an actress.
The zoom out to reveal Anne Hathaway on the Golden Gate Bridge.
What's she doing there?
She's just woken up on the Golden Gate Bridge. She's in a crop top to notably reveal her lack of navel. Yeah. Yep. And she's got blood on her hands.
Oh. Wait a minute. What if you have the blood on her hands as a dramatic shot dribbles down and the camera follows it, and where you would expect there to be a belly button, there isn't, and the music goes, duh!
title comes up.
Yeah.
The girl with no navel.
And then the blood on hands is never addressed again.
She just hurt herself. She was doing the glass recycling, and she cut herself.
On the Golden Gate Bridge.
I mean, I don't know why you put her on the Golden Gate Bridge. Am I missing a reference to something here?
I just think it's an interesting place to do a full zoom out and then have someone not know why they're there.
It's a very interesting place to put out your glass recycling, isn't it? You're looking for a dynamic mystery. There's your mystery.
She's walked to the centre of the Golden Gate Bridge with a bin bag and just hurls it over into the San Francisco Bay. Yep.
And then she says, in air quotes, she literally raises her hands and says, in air quotes, recycling. And then walks off the Golden Gate Bridge.
Into the sea?
Yeah.
What? Is it the sea? What's it a bridge over?
It's a bay, I think, isn't it?
San Francisco Bay. Yeah,
San Francisco Bay.
Right, we've got no plot. We've just got Anne Hathaway jumping off a bridge with no navel.
Yeah, but it's a striking opening, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anne Hathaway, no, she's not just jumping off a bridge with no navel. She's doing the recycling on the bridge. She's hurting her hand. She's drooling blood down her stomach, which has no navel. She's Anne Hathaway. She says recycling, and then she jumps off the bridge in the water. That's an incredibly convoluted opening. Every single person watching is going to be going, what is going on here? I want to find out. And but then they were thinking, or B, this is just a weird art film and it's not going to be anything. I'm going.
What if... What if then we cut to Karen Gillan in the police department?
Sure.
Someone's just come in, the bloated corpse of Anne Hathaway, because she's just been found dead in the in San Francisco Bay, after having, you know, landed on a load of broken glass as she hit the water.
She just recycled that she just put there.
Yeah. And then
she's and the gonna, cops she... are go- the police are going, why has she got all of these slivers of broken glass in her?
Yeah.
That's part of the mystery, and it's a complete dead end.
Well, no, that is a dead end, but that's the first thing that Karen Gillan demonstrates to us why she's such a great detective.
Right.
Because she's able to walk that back.
Oh, yeah, so that opening scene was her her describing it to the police. And that was like the sort of the film's reconstruction of what she had deduced. And it turns out later not to be quite right. It's not what happened. Actually, someone put a load of bits of glass in her and then threw her in the water.
Yeah, that's it. Because I think Karen Gillan goes on a search for Anne Hathaway, finds her sister, or finds someone who like looks like her, and then who says, "Oh yeah, my twin sister is missing."
Someone is cloning the entire population of San Francisco.
Whoa!
Yeah, but this is the first one that's escaped, and so and I think there's a twist at the end where Anne Hathaway, the one Karen Gillan has been going around with trying to look for clues, finds out that new Anne Hathaway is also a clone. There were two clones of Anne Hathaway.
Neo Anne Hathaway.
Yeah. the one that jumped off the bridge was like a failed version that they'd programmed to throw herself away and recycle herself. She was recycling herself.
Oh right, she was putting out the recycling.
Yeah.
But they just skewed her programming so that she thinks that the way you do that is not into a blue bin or anything, but into the sea.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those. Oh, take out the recycling, won't you? And recycle all the useless garbage. And previously, someone said you're useless garbage. She has
clones,
to find
though,
a receptacle big enough.
Clones aren't robots. You don't just program them.
But if you do, like you could in that sort of in this world,
you could Ludovico technique them,
brainwash them,
flashing images in their face. Yeah,
yeah.
I'm just living the idea of this body washed up, load of glass, and then put them on a table in the police department, and all these police going, "Why is there a load of glass in them?" And Karen Gillan going, "Shut up, all of yous." Shut up! Can't you see this girl's got no navel? That's the thing we should be concentrating on here. Not the glass, the fact that she's obviously a clone.
I like how Karen Gillan now has Nick Cage's job. just like... In any other place, that rant would have been Nick Cage's territory.
It's Karen Gillan now.
Karen Gillan now.
I'm sure she can pull it off.
I'm well up for the real life Karen Gillan to essentially take over the roles of the real life Nicolas Cage from now on. Imagine that. I just think that would work.
I think she should just start rebooting all Nick Cage films.
Yeah.
I could eat a peach for hours.
It's a face off.
Sorry, carry on.
Do you want another one from Phil Walters?
Yeah.
Murder on the High Sea. As in...
On the High Sea?
The musical note. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Isn't that just is that a mystery in which someone has been murdered at the end of an opera?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah,
they finally hit that note.
It's like, you know, that episode where someone as Daffy Duck or whoever has rigged up Bugs Bunny's piano so that if he plays a note, it'll explode. And he annoyingly plays around it. It's like that. If they hit a high C, then they'll explode. But then they know this, but the show must go on, and it's this opera, and you know, it's really they're artistically a perfectionist, so they won't. It's a real test of their character if they will go
through
it.
There's a visiting functionary, or in fact, like the visiting like emperor of a nearby dictatorship.
Yeah.
Is visiting, and he has, and it's peace talks, big peace talks going on, and it's all predicated on the fact that he loves this one opera from the country he was previously at war with.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't go completely perfect, then he might well go to war again.
Oh, no, I thought there would be like a kind of political high figure that goes to see an opera, and apparently there's a plot to kill him at this opera, and so Tom Cruise is trying to figure out what the murder weapon is and how they're going to get in, because obviously he's set up this, he's head of the security firm.
You're describing that scene in Mission Impossible 3, whatever it is.
Six. Yeah.
But how many are there? Fudging hell.
Six. maybe five? Who cares? Right. Tom Cruise, head of the security firm, they're going, this person's going to kill the president at this opera. Not someone's going to kill the president at this opera. So he's looking around for, like, weapons and stuff like that. Turns out, this lead singer at this opera can kill with a directed high C.
What? What? No.
So she's got like a weaponized equivalent of echolocation. She can kind of go like, oh! And like a ripple of rings can come out.
Yeah.
And kill someone.
Turns into an air bullet.
Yeah.
And Kevin Spacey, the president, his head explodes.
Whee.
Right. I. Okay.
There's nothing but resistance to this on Matt's face right now.
I can't. I'm just nowhere with that. I'm like, what?
Murder on the high C.
And it just happens, and then there's no mystery. It just happens.
Well, no, that's the thing. Kevin Spacey's head just explodes.
Oh, so we don't see the rippling rings. They're just at the opera. Kevin Spacey's head explodes randomly, and the mystery is like, what was that?
Yeah, turns out, how did that happen?
They have this assassin who's trained her voice over years to be a deadly air bullet. A piercing sound.
Mm. That's what happened.
All right, if you want.
And maybe it's not just that. Maybe the mystery is also that, like, someone did something to Kevin Spacey so that there's a little resonance thing in his head that the sound, like, boop, and it poof, and it just causes more vibrations than usual. Like a speaker, for example.
It's
either that, right? Or everyone in that opera house dies.
All their heads explode.
I think this should be like a almost not a parody, but a sort of weird reflection of the Phantom of the Opera, where like the murderer is telling people what he's about to do cryptically, because he's a ridiculously theatrical killer. Like, and the idea that the Phantom of the Opera exists in this world, and like he's playing on those fears and playing on those sort of like, oh, I'm a spooky theatrical bad guy threatening to do this, and he's like, the murder will come from the high sea, and
it's then, an opera like, set
they do this
on
this
board
whole
a ship
bit.
Yeah.
They do, no, I mean, he does the high C with the number with the letter C, the number C, and they spend all this time looking into a potential foreign assassin who's come in. There's all this rumor mongering that maybe someone can kill with their voice, right? Mm. And then what happens is that in the top stalls, the highest altitude seats in the theater, one of the C's detaches and becomes a throwing star, and that's what the that's what the like on the demarcation of which row it is, it's C.
And right, and you thought
why is it often?
And you thought singing a directed high pitched C killing someone was ridiculous.
Yeah, Tom, I still think that. I still think that is ridiculous.
All right, you know what we've got here? This is a clear clue situation. This is a film with two ends. And it depends which screening you happen to visit.
You decide, audience. You decide which one was the better one.
Well, I just think that if you start a mystery film, right, and then the final twist at the end is something that is patently impossible, then you're going to have angry viewers. You're going to have angry theater
viewers. Me, you're not.
Because the whole point of a mystery is...
That was a very clever bit.
You maybe
well done.
Could have put the bits and bobs together as you went along, rather than just this, by the way, mutants from X-Men are here.
I love mystery films where at the end it's just like, oh shit, I literally did not see that coming because I couldn't.
I couldn't have seen that coming because yeah, you'll love the series Sherlock.
I couldn't have seen it coming because it was impossible.
None of the clues were there. That's really my...
All of the clues were there. She was there, stood singing. Kevin Spacey's or everyone in the auditorium's heads explode. We're not sure yet.
My favorite
everyone's
kind of mystery film is the one where when it's revealed, you go, oh, none of the clues were there.
No. It's a true mystery film because you're like, what the fuck just happened?
It's a mystery what you just watched.
Yeah.
In a sort of like, rather than a mystery that confounds the ages, it's the mysteries of the deep sea. Sort of like unknowable
high sea.
Yeah. That's what it was.
Oh, my face is hurting now.
Let's move on.
I'm going to put a really bored expression for the next few minutes just because my face hurts.
From Ed Crawley, we've got What the Butler live streamed.
I think I've got an idea for this one, actually.
Go on.
So it's like a modern. It's almost what you'd expect. It's a modern Butler, right? Which, you know, they do exist. They do.
Yep, they
I
do.
Promise. And this one, but they're, you know how you've got this hipster culture of, like, everything is artisanal, right?
Yeah.
Well, this guy is like, look, I'm a butler. That's really cool to hipsters, because it really is. I'm a butler. Here's the things I do in my day-to-day as a butler. He's got a live stream thing, and it just so happens that he is sharpening some knives... And, like, you know, polishing a candlestick and, you know, wrapping a length of rope around something that a kind of ornamental...
Who would watch this live stream?
Wheel. Hipsters.
You'd be surprised.
There are very, very popular streams of people making rye bread. So, I mean, he's also making rye bread.
And he's putting logs on a fire.
Yeah,
a certain
it's like
way up.
Soothing, and he's a very charismatic fellow.
Yeah,
and then you know, but he's doing all these things, and then people in his house start dying, and obviously he's the number one suspect because not only did he have access to that candlestick that he polished with which someone got bludgeoned to death. But also, he sharpened that knife on live stream with which someone got stabbed. Someone was strangled with the ornamental rope that he was winding around something. Like, all of the things he was doing on the whole of the last day. And
this is
like,
a good idea. I like this.
He's like, I'm just going for a break, and then a murder happens.
Yeah.
And he's good. Like, he's trying to prove himself innocent. And I'm thinking, right, so in YouTube gaming, when people are, not YouTube, but on when people are streaming gaming online,
yeah,
they're doing multiplayer games, there's a concept called stream sniping, where essentially people go, realize that they're coming up against a popular streamer, and then they go to their stream and go, ooh, that's where he is on the map, or ooh, that's where he's hiding, or ooh, that's the character he'll be choosing. I will use that information to my advantage because I've just come up against them online. I think the killer would be someone who is really, really into the streams and therefore knows when the breaks are going to be, knows where he isn't, where the butler isn't going to be, and then starts killing. It's like he's a copycat butler.
That's a genuinely really good idea for a film.
Yeah, that is good, yeah, yeah.
If only butler's live stream stuff.
Well, honestly, just remove the word butler. He doesn't have to be a butler. Yeah. You've got yourself a proper good little little mystery book there.
I mean, it could work with any live streaming celebrity. Any you, Dave, how would you fancy committing murder? Or not?
Yeah, I would not be committing murder. I'd be taking the rap for murder, so I'm going to pass.
How would you like to be framed for murder?
Who less?
I think maybe, yeah, the like the head of the household is actually the one who's a really big fan of his own butler on the stream. And he's been doing it. I don't know.
So he was... No, before he was a butler... Right, the guy used to do all of this stuff on streams, and the local lord, whatever, whoever would hire a butler, was a fan of this, and used to watch the streams, and he's like, that guy would be a good butler, so I'll hire him as a butler, and B, I can frame him for murder for some reason. So
I'll never tell him I'm a fan. I'll just hire him anyway.
So he just hires him as a butler, and the guy's like, hey, guys, there's going to be a slight change to the streams because now I'm being hired as a butler, so now we're going to be doing it in a great big manor house. And everyone's like, brilliant, that's even better. And so he still does the same stuff on the streams after that. But meanwhile, the lord of the manor knows exactly where he's going to be because he's like, involved, like whenever the guy, you know, books time off or whatever, you know, even he, the lord of the household knows exactly where this guy's going to be.
It's not the lord of the manor. It's someone who could inherit the manor if the lady of the manor died.
Right. So it's the
mother's fortune.
So yeah, it's the millennial son, which explains why he's watching streams anyway.
Yeah.
Who talks like this?
It's a sort of
Brendan Fraser.
Oh, I was thinking Matt Berry, but you know.
Yeah, good call, yeah.
Well, how about Brendan Fraser dubbed over by Matt Berry at all times?
If you like.
Well, Brendan Fraser is the butler. Matt Berry is the killer.
Yeah.
And Barbara Windsor is the lady of the manor.
Yeah,
absolutely. Barbara Windsor needs to be cast in more things. I'm really liking the idea that maybe part of this movie is shot in kind of found footage style of like over the shoulder sort of GoPro butler footage. So he's like serving tea to these. He's serving tea to these characters who are integral characters in the story. They'll either die or they'll accuse someone or whatever.
Sorry, listener, we both fell about laughing at the phrase GoPro butler footage, but I was just laughing too hard to emit any sound, so you at home wouldn't have been aware. I just kind of crumpled up.
So you've got GoPro butler footage. It's great. You've got... you know, all these guys are introduced through you watching a live stream of this guy serving them tea, and they're saying really interesting, like, intrigue. They're the ones giving exposition, you know, in the background, because you've got what the butler saw is sort of a big draw anyway, isn't it? It's the sort of you finding out about who stands to inherit what and what they've been doing and who disagrees with whom, by going through the eyes of a servant, like in Downton Abbey,
kind of a weird
upstairs, downstairs.
The phrase came to mind just then. Big butler. He's going around with a camera. He's filming these people's lives.
That's his streaming name. There we go. We got it all sewn up.
Big
That's
butler.
The film. Okay. Let's get down to working on the script and we'll send it off to someone who doesn't care.
With any luck, you'll get some patrons who think that they're donating to that Life's a Pitch podcast about football.
If someone was just drunk and like didn't see all the the movie posters and stuff all around the thing, and
they were like, this is a really weird design for this podcast patron, but okay.
I don't think
anyone who's listening to a football podcast is probably going to be a bit drunk.
Maybe, yeah. I would have to be.
That's an incredibly judgmental call there, Dave.
Hey, maybe I'm just talking about... Personally, if I was going to listen to a podcast about football, I'd have to be halfway to Everest.
Also, I do not think that anyone who is listening to a BT Sports podcast is going to want to pay them extra money for no reason.
We're forgetting that it's BT Sport. They're funded. It's BT. Yeah. They're not going to want to crowdfund their podcast.
That's what I'm getting at, yeah. So, like, we're not going to get a letter from BT Sport saying, like, oh, excuse me, we've come to Patreon to try and get our podcast funded. Crowdfunded, and you've already taken the username Life's a Pitch Podcast, so excuse me. Yeah, not gonna happen. So anyway, yeah,
but if it does, there might be some moolah in it for you.
Sneaky moolah.
Sneaky moolah. Hi, I'm Sneaky Moolah. Welcome to You've Just Been Done by Fraud.
I'm Sneaky Moolah. You're on the Fraudcast.
So from John Ramsey we've got The Gardener Didn't Do It.
Okay. Alright.
Mystery solved. In
so
part.
There's a murder. It's at a big stately home and it was done with, you know, shears or something. Something that would imply that the gardener did do it.
I think they found a corpse underneath the lawn or something, you know, that sort of just recently been re-turfed.
Yeah.
Or they can't figure out how they got this corpse under the earth without disturbing the lawn, disturbing the garden, unless it had been re-turfed straight after.
Yeah. So it's clear the gardener did it. So the gardener has to now become a detective and solve the mystery. Go on.
And I was just saying, all of his clues are absolutely like botany related, and using his own expertise of kind of like, well, these kind of twigs only snap if given a certain amount of force in this part of spring because they're full of the right good vibrant juices.
And the petals of this flower only fall off when a non-gardener touches them. But anyway, what he uncovers is that everyone except the gardener did it. He's the only one who didn't do it.
It's like Murder on the Orient Express, sort of like everyone kind of conspired to not know who did it. Apart from in this one, instead of just saying, I don't know who did it, they all decide to just choose a patsy.
Starring Alan Titchmarsh.
Yeah,
as the gardener.
About time. It is about time Titchmarsh had his Hollywood debut, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, I agree.
Deserved Hollywood success.
From the silver screen. What could we wish for more than to see Alan Titchmarsh's face blown up to IMAX?
I really want to see that.
Yeah. Just a quick, like, other idea for a pitch for that one. It's the Chelsea Flower Show.
Yeah.
And someone's died. And just, like, everyone there is a gardener.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, something about the way they've died shows everyone there that a gardener couldn't possibly have done this.
And it was done using some really, really sloppy gardening. No gardener would ever put yellow and blue flowers together in the same bed in this patterning.
So it's the question is, find the like, I could take this ridiculous and say, like, there is a danger of all gardeners being tarred with the same brush here. And so all the gardeners have to conflate to try and figure out who the fake gardener is. Denounce them.
Starring Alan Titchmarsh again.
Yeah.
Because there's a politician just saying, like, I'll tell you what, all gardeners are murderers.
These gardeners, with their ways, murdering people,
they're just as bad as ISIS.
Alan Titchmarsh. For our American listeners and anyone who didn't grow up in the 90s...
Yeah. You have to understand that Alan Titchmarsh is not one of the Hobbits. He just, in every single aspect of his appearance and being and career, appears to be a Hobbit.
Yeah. That's a great description of Alan Titchmarsh.
He's a TV gardener, basically.
TV
that's,
Hobbit.
That's
what I thought you were going to say.
Television Hobbit.
TV Hobbit.
He's just one of those
Alan Titchmarsh, television Hobbit.
He's one of those people who has the right name for what they are. Like, like Terry Nutkins, who was a squirrel expert. You know?
Bill Oddie, who is just a very odd person.
There's a ride at Alton Towers called the Squirrel Nut Ride. And there's no way...
I bet there isn't.
There's no... I don't know what it's called, but it's Squirrel Something Ride, right? It's for kids. And there's no way that wasn't being called the Squirrel Nutkins Ride. Like... because why would you name it anything else? Squirrel Nutkins. Anyway... Bill Oddie, I'm not sure about Bill Oddie. Is he named... I guess he's a comedian more than anything else, so...
Yeah,
it makes sense that...
Yeah, he started out being odd.
An oddie.
As a career, yeah.
Yeah. In the goodies, right? That was the one.
He was one of the goodies, yes.
Yes.
It was an oddie, but it was a goodie.
Hey! Nice!
But going back to TV Hobbits,
sure.
What American people often don't know is that they were so happy when Peter Jackson did a movie version of the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
In the UK, we had every single year, we just had TV versions of Tolkien properties. It just came out over and over again. It was like Doctor Who, just that everyone got recast over and over. You know, they were missing out, really. Obviously, all the tapes were destroyed a long time ago, but, you know, you missed out.
Dom, what's he on about?
I have no idea.
Okay.
No fucking clue.
I'm just, basically, right, I'm trying to start a rumour that on TV, British people were given about 15 different reboots of The Hobbit.
It's true, we were, and Alan Titchmarsh was always in the cast playing The Hobbit Alan Titchmarsh.
Yeah.
Do you remember some of those classic Gandalfs? Like Sylvester McCoy, he was Gandalf at one point. Yeah. Do you remember when Tom Baker was Gandalf?
Yeah, I do. I remember when...
Who else was the Doctor?
The facade of the joke falls.
What's all the other ones' names?
Matt Smith was the Doctor. Davison. Was Gandalf? Sorry.
Yeah.
I was just trying to think of good Gandalfs from old TV, really.
Ian McKellen, remember when he was Gandalf?
Remember when Brian Blessed was Gandalf?
Oh, he was a good Gandalf.
Oh my god, when he fought the Balrog, fucking hell.
Oh,
that Balrog walked off.
Yeah.
You shall not pass!
Balrog's
like, fuck that. I'm off.
Yeah. That Balrog just didn't pass.
No.
That was just true.
It didn't do it.
He was like, clearly I'm not welcome here. See you later.
In fact, the bit was in that edition of Lord of the Rings, when Brian Blessed was supposed to say "You shall not pass," he said "You shall pass onto the next life, Balrog." And he went on to actually murder. Well, no, it was manslaughter. It was deemed manslaughter in the courts.
Right.
But the actor who was playing the Balrog did die of his injuries.
Yeah.
After that take.
I tell you what, though, everyone talks about that episode because that was amazing, and there was the death, obviously.
Controversy.
Yeah. But I thought that the one that they did 3 years later was better when Brian Blessed came back, this time to play Galadriel, Lady of Lothlorien. And it was just the most epic thing I've ever seen. You know that bit where she goes all spooky?
Yes.
And he was going, "I shall be beloved, and everyone shall bow before me as queen and stuff." That was absolutely
I remember sitting, kneeling next to my TV.
Yeah.
And thinking, you are beloved.
Yeah, we will all go along with that, Brian.
Yeah, and it didn't matter.
And for that year, we all worshipped Brian Blessed as our queen.
Yeah.
He was on the pound notes.
He did that. Yeah, he did.
He was everywhere.
He saw that and stepped down.
Yeah, and it was... What was really great about that year was everything. Just with Brian Blessed as the Queen of England for 1 year. Mm. Do you remember how great it was?
Oh yeah, you know when these sort of like revisionist history type people say, "Oh yeah, oh get back to Britain in the old days, you know, oh before we were in the EU when everyone was in the village green." That's what Britain was for that 1 year.
It really was. It was epic, and it can't be repeated. You know, Brexit. The reason Brexit happened, of course, as everyone knows, is because of nostalgia for that year when Brian Blessed was.
I was going to say, Nigel Farage lied to us. He said like, "If we vote for Brexit, we'll get Brian back."
He said that. They wrote it on a bus. It said, "Brian Blessed will be the Queen." And nobody asked Brian Blessed. And quite frankly, as soon as they came to him, they put together a dossier. Do you remember, like, just around the time of the election, just afterwards?
Yes.
This summer, was it June? They took a dossier They took a plan to Brian Blessed.
Like, and
he rejected it. Rejected it. He said, no, he's not interested. He doesn't want to be the Queen. And frankly... They're carrying on like a load of idiots. And they had to go back to the drawing board, and they still haven't figured it out now. It was all just based on lies.
I believe when they brought that to him, he was halfway up Everest.
He was.
So it was...
He's always halfway up Everest, which is his euphemism for mostly drunk.
Yeah.
"I'm sorry, fellows, but I'm halfway up Everest right now. Can we do this in the morning?"
Well, nobody's quite sure if he means slightly drunk or if that's just his demeanour and he means very slightly aroused.
I mean, I think all three things are equal in his being. I think it doesn't matter by which... I don't think it matters by which route he gets there, be it by climbing Everest, alcohol or arousal. But the net result is the same, which is a damn strong queen and a strong leadership for the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland.
Hello, just want to say thank you for listening to the Life's a Pitch deleted scenes.
We hope you've enjoyed it. If you have, maybe consider sharing it with your friends on social media, by word of mouth, anywhere really. Maybe put it onto a thumb drive and just throw it at someone. And maybe even reviewing it on wherever you got it. If you find it somewhere on iTunes or Acast or wherever, maybe review it there. 5 stars, thumbs up, give everyone the heads up.
Like I said before, thank you. Cheers.
Right.
Bye.